We look skyward at the beginning of the month to figure out what you're going to see up there in the big blue sky. What a wonderful world we live in. I was thinking, with all the fireworks going off, if there were Martians watching all the excitement going on, Dr. Buddy Stark, what would they think is happening? Would they understand?
That's a good question. I mean, they'd have to aim their telescopes at our country on July 4th and November 5th. They could aim them over in Europe and they'd see fireworks. Who knows?
Dr. Buddy Stark is with the University of Michigan Planetarium. He's on the air each month here on the Lucy Ann Land Show, 1290 WLBY. This is a notable day today on the July 6th.
It is, yeah. So today is what we call aphelion. So
aphelion,
yeah.
Aphelion.
Yeah, very good. So helion is things referring to the sun, and ap is a prefix that means like at its furthest. So the Earth today is the day in which the Earth is the furthest from the sun that we ever get in our orbit around our star.
Is that why it's so gray out there right now?
Yeah, I guess so. That surprises a lot of people because you sort of expect it to be in January, right? Like we expect because we were furthest from the sun today, and that seems like it should be cold, right? Because like we're very far. But the Earth's orbit is, of course, nearly a circle, so it doesn't really make a difference in terms of temperature. Normally, we're like 93 million miles away from the sun. Today, we're at about 94.5 million miles away.
Okay.
So, yeah, a little further than usual.
All right. And anything else notable about that, though, or about being so far away?
Just an interesting little tidbit, really. Yeah, so starting tomorrow, we get a little bit closer to the sun each day. But again, that doesn't really relate to our temperatures. That's all about the tilt of the Earth.
Right.
We talked last month about how June 21st is the summer solstice, the first day of summer.
Right.
And so that's when we're tilted towards the sun, and that's why it gets so hot this time of year.
I learned a new word today, aphelion.
Yep,
helion
absolutely.
Means having to do with the sun.
Correct.
And ap means farthest away.
Yep. So perihelion happens about 6 months from now, and that is when the Earth is closest to the sun.
Oh.
Peri being.
That is strange that they're opposite of the months, I would have thought.
Right. Well, it lines up well if you're south of the equator, right? Because
this
is winter down there. So there it feels right. But
right.
Of course, again, it actually makes no difference.
Well,
it's all
we're
about
so
the tilt.
Person-centric. I mean,
right.
It's all about where we are.
Of course. Exactly. Yep.
All right. What else is happening in the month of July?
So some things that you can go out and actually see in your sky. Venus is still putting on a show. It has been for the last couple of months and will continue through really all summer. If you watch the sunset, which this time of year, you have to stay up pretty late just to watch the sunset. A little after 9 p.m. right now, you will see Venus shortly thereafter. A very, very bright, it looks like a very bright star right in the same direction, kind of over there in the west.
Yep. You know, is it just me? I get up very early in the morning. I get up around 5 o'clock, and I just thought it would be darker out in summertime than it actually is in the morning. Am I missing something here?
No, I mean, it's a very common experience. I often, when we're in the planetarium and I'm telling people, like, if you go outside at 10 p.m., you're not going to see stars. It's not dark enough.
Well, and that I understand. It's summertime, we expect that. But
right.
I thought then in the morning it would be darker.
Right. It's all about the day overall lengthens. So like even the morning is brighter and the evening is brighter, right?
Oh.
So more you have to go out even earlier in the morning to see a dark sky, and you have to go out even earlier or even later at night.
So there's a small window for you what are you people?
Yeah,
astronomers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I tell people there's a trade-off because in the summertime, the weather's pleasant and you can like sit outside without having to bundle and freeze to death, but you have to wait until 11:30 or midnight
right.
to really see a dark sky.
Well, it's a young astronomer's
life,
isn't it?
I guess so.
Well, that's cool. All right, so we've got Venus we're going to be looking for.
Yep, got Venus. And then in terms of constellations, this is one of the rare times of the year where we get to see Scorpius in our sky, south in the very low in the south, you'll see a fishhook shape, mm-hmm. and that is the tail of Scorpius. And finally, we also, toward the end of the month, have the Delta Aquarid meteor shower peaking, which is a lesser meteor shower. It's not one to get super excited about. Even on a good night, on a very dark sky, you're going to see 20 or 25 meteors an hour, so one every few minutes, and that's under like perfect conditions. You know, realistically, it's more like one every 10 minutes.
Most people understand what meteors are and when they see these displays, but invariably you get all these questions. Dude, what was that in the sky? Did you see that?
Right.
Why is it that is it because it's just so different, so shocking? I mean,
I think part of it is that we, as a society, look up less than we ever have, right? I mean, we have a lot of artificial nighttime lights. We've got a lot of other things entertaining us now. We've got things that we can sort of do at nighttime. You know, before electricity, what you did at nighttime was either sleep or you went outside and you talked, right? I mean, because there wasn't a whole lot of work to be done. It wasn't very bright. You were burning using candlelight, which was costly, these kinds of things. So because we look up less often, when we do happen to look up and we see something that sort of surprises us, it's sort of conversation worthy. Yeah. And we like to talk about it.
Mm. But it seems like they don't remember that that could be a
meteor. It just keeps, yeah.
Meteor.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Anything else on your docket?
The only other thing that this is not something you're going to see, but something that's very exciting going on right now is the Vera. We've talked about a year ago about the Vera Rubin Observatory. It opened about a year ago.
Where is it?
It is in Chile, in South America.
Okay.
So it is in the Southern Hemisphere. It is one of the largest observatories in the world. It is massive. And it opened a year ago. They've been doing a lot of testing to make sure that everything's working fine, even in that. So they're not doing direct, real, like consistent observations yet. They've already found over 16,000 new asteroids in a year,
wow.
Which, to put it into perspective, in the past, we've known about something like 18,000 asteroids. So, I mean, it's essentially doubled our count of asteroids that we have seen in just a year. Now, starting a couple of weeks ago, what's very exciting is that it began taking its real, the point of this brand new telescope is to give us a time lapse of high definition time lapse of the Southern Hemisphere sky. So it actually, it's so big and can take such a powerful image that it can take an image of the entire Southern Hemisphere sky about every 2 or 3 days. And then it starts over. Like it starts right back to where it was and it takes a new picture. And so it's looping through the entire sky every 2 or 3 days. And ultimately we're going to get a time lapse of like things that change over time.
Wow.
In the universe.
They haven't done this before?
Well, we have, but we've done it in very small sections of the sky. This is a much larger camera. And so it's able to take an image, that same quality image of a much wider portion of the sky.
Huh.
So this type of resolution mapping the entirety of the Southern Hemisphere sky hasn't been done before. They expect to find millions of new, it's going to take 10, they're going to do a 10-year time lapse, and they expect to find millions of new supernovas, which are when a star explodes. Because the benefit of like taking a picture of the same part of the sky over and over and over and over again is that if anything does change, it becomes very obvious. You know, yesterday's picture looked like this, and today's picture looks like this, and like
wow.
There's a much brighter star there.
Amazing.
So it's very exciting. In the next few years, we should start getting some really interesting stuff from that.
Dr. Vera Rubin was an American astronomer. Why is this located in Chile?
Well, so it is funded it's a good question on two fronts. So one, Chile right now is a boom for astronomy. I mean, one of the big parts of their economy right now is a lot of observatories are being built in that country and a lot of astronomy is being done in that country because most of Chile is mountains. It's a massive mountain range. And if you're building a telescope on the Earth, one of the problems that we have is clouds. If it's cloudy, it doesn't matter how good your telescope is, you're not getting a good picture. So if you put your telescope on top of a mountain above most of the clouds, then you can do more astronomy. So that's beneficial. And it's also sort of an arid region. There's less humidity, so the images you're going to get are better. So there is like geographical reasons to build stuff in Chile. The reason that we are involved is because a good chunk of the funding was through United States universities, right? So we own something like 40% of the time on this telescope.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so it's United States astronomers. I mean, not entirely. Of course, there are European astronomers also have rights to time on it as well. But a lot of the research that will be getting done on that telescope is done by us.
So Dr. Rubin was known for her discoveries on dark matter.
Correct. She's known as the mother of dark matter.
What is dark matter?
Dark matter. The primary idea or the sort of initial observation that gave rise to this idea of dark matter is that most things in the universe are very well explained on a broad sense by Newtonian physics. So like the stuff that guides our understanding of how planets go around the sun is the same stuff that guides our understanding of why the water rotates in your sink.
The gravitational pull.
All that gravitational pull, exactly. And so when you watch things out there in space orbit, anything else, or circle or anything like that, it's very predictable. And things that are further away from the center of mass of something, so like planets in our solar system, the further they are from the sun, the slower they move. Because the gravitational pull of the sun is slower or is less out there, and so they orbit around more slowly. And we expect this same thing with galaxies. When you look at a galaxy, there is a massive black hole at the center of that galaxy, and so the further away you get from all of that mass, the slower and slower you should move.
Wow.
That's our expectation. But the reality is that doesn't happen. The outside of a galaxy spins much faster than it should if you were just trying to explain it with our understanding of how gravity works. And so that's a big puzzle. And one way to understand that puzzle is if there's a lot of other mass that we can't see for some reason that is currently not entirely well understood, right? Then that would explain why galaxies spin faster than they should be spinning.
Just because there's more mass?
Yeah, because if there was more mass, right? Because like if for example, if the sun was much heavier, then the Earth would have to orbit much quicker, or otherwise it would fall in. Right.
Oh.
And so if there was a lot of extra mass that we didn't know about, that would explain why the outside parts of gravity spun faster
wow.
than they should.
Interesting.
And so we're attempting, I mean, and we have been for 30 years to find some kind of evidence and better understand.
So we didn't understand that until we discovered dark matter.
Oh, I mean, arguably, we still don't understand it.
I don't know. You explained it really well.
But yes, I mean, that dark matter is one of the attempts to explain that phenomenon that we
see.
So
let's bring it right back to the beginning of our conversation today with Dr. Buddy Stark from the University of Michigan Planetarium. This is a day where we are the farthest away from the sun. Does
Correct.
That mean we are going more slowly?
Absolutely. Yeah. So not noticeably so for us, but the Earth, when it gets at its furthest point from the sun, is moving slightly more slowly than it is when it's at its closest point to the sun.
I'm moving more slow today, too. So. Oh, great talking with you today. Tell everyone what they can do at the planetarium.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we are in our summer schedule, which means that unlike most of the year where we only have public shows on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, we now have them Tuesdays through Sundays. So the only day you can't get a planetarium show is Mondays. The museum is open 7 days a week for our summer schedule as well, but I take a break on Mondays to make sure that I have some kind of day off at some point.
Isn't it nice he comes in though to do this? I love you. You're wonderful. Thank you so much. All you have to do is Google University of Michigan Planetarium. You'll get all the details on all the excitement there. Thanks for sharing your vast knowledge.
Thanks, Lucy.
Dr. Buddy Stark, director of the University of Michigan Planetarium on the Lucy Ann Land Show, Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.